Several years ago, Congressman John Lewis wrote a graphic novel called March. In it, the sound bubbles had things like the sickening crack of police batons, the roiling clink of tear gas canisters, the bone-crushing thud of bodies hitting the ground beneath men on horseback. The graphic novel was autobiographical. It starts with the day that he thought that he was going to die during the march on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Alabama in 1965. John Lewis is no stranger to clashing with authorities along race lines. He grew up in Alabama in the last century. He had friends who had been lynched. He listened to the early stories of civil rights, and he said, "That could easily be me." He was so transfixed by the injustice and by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and by Gandhi and nonviolence that he became the youngest member or youngest person to speak at the March on Washington. He was just 23 years old. Could you imagine that? At 23 years old, having that presence to speak to those crowds and inspire. He received an honorary degree at Marquette University several years ago, and I was able to sit with him and listen to him speak. There he talked about what he thought that we, as modern-day champions of civil rights, need to know and need to remember. He said that we need to remember the importance of discipline, that the movement seems to have gotten away from discipline. And he talked about the power of creative nonviolence. You've heard the phrase before, and yet it bears repeating, the importance of the power of creative nonviolence. He said that when your weapon is peace, that wins support. When your weapon is peace, everyone can participate. When your cause is just and your weapon is peace, no one can stand against you. He also reminded that violence creates marginalization. We've sure seen that, have we not? Many of the rest of my remarks can be credited to David Loos of Luther Seminary. He talks about Congressman Lewis's life being heroic, a marathon toward justice. But I ask you, what if I could tell you that what you do this week could change the world? Would you believe me? Would you stand a little taller, put your shoulders back? Or would you scoff, secretly start pulling out your smartphone, maybe look through a little Facebook, start your grocery list? This isn't going to be for me. Two women once made a decision, took a chance, and changed the world. It was simultaneously a simple gesture and heroic. They disobeyed. And because of their act of disobedience, God was able to rescue Israel from their oppression. Their names are Shipra and Puah. The beginning of Exodus starts on a chilling note. A ruler wishing to solidify his political base identifies a common enemy, a scapegoat, to blame for whatever current problems plague society. We've seen that movie before, haven't we? Of course, that brings to mind images of Nazi Germany, but also it's the story of all sorts of different groups of folks. Illegal immigrants, welfare moms, the gays, the undeserving poor, the Muslims. You probably could add to my list. One of the chief manifestations of sin is our penchant for defining ourselves over and against others, and in the process, denying others their essential humanity, their status as beloved children of God. As little Marlowe said in the children's sermon, the Hulk it looks different, but we are called to love everybody. I really didn't need to write the rest of the sermon, did I? This time around, it's the ancient Israelites. They get fingered by Pharaoh, who has conveniently forgotten that for generations, the Israelites that he now names as terrorists had been considered honored guests and allies. And so he first enslaves them and then turns to even darker means, telling the Hebrew midwives, Shipra and Puah, to kill all of the Hebrew baby boys that are delivered. Ironically, it's the girls who are apparently of no account to Pharaoh that he should fear, because it's first these two midwives and then Moses' Hebrew mother and then his sister and then Pharaoh's Egyptian daughter, all of whom end up saving him and making this story a story of liberation. He tells Shipra and Puah to kill all of the Hebrew baby boys, but they refuse. They don't kill the boys. They lie to Pharaoh, telling him that the Hebrew women give birth so quickly that we just can't get there in time. It's a courageous act of civil disobedience, and it changes history. For one of the boys who is spared will be called Moses, and he will lead his people out of slavery. He will deliver to them the law. He will lead them to God's promised land. And it all starts here with two women who are willing to say no to an act of injustice. I very much doubt that they thought that they were changing the world. They were just being faithful. They were following what they knew to be right in their hearts. They were heeding their conscience. Andy Andrews wrote a little book called The Butterfly Effect, in which he catalogs the extraordinary impact of simple and courageous efforts. Except, when you go back, you can never really tell which effects made the biggest difference. Should Norman Borlaug, who developed high-yield, disease-resistant corn and wheat, be credited with saving 2 billion lives from famine? Or should Henry Wallace, the one-time U.S. vice president who created an office in New Mexico to develop hybrid seed for arid climates, be the one who is credited with saving those lives because he hired Borlaug to run that office? Or should we credit George Washington Carver, who took young Henry Wallace on long walks and instilled in him a love for plants? Or should we credit Moses and Susan Carver, who adopted the orphan George as their son and helped him to become the educated inventor who he was? It could probably go back even further. Andrews points out how interconnected our actions are, creating the unforeseen butterfly effect that can ripple across time and space and affect the lives of millions. A school teacher may give encouragement to a student who will see something in herself that she had never seen before. And that student will in turn befriend another student who was on the verge of giving up on life. Or maybe a young person who you'll tell about this sermon will stand up to the neighborhood bullying this week. Excuse me. And not only help the kids who are being bullied, but also the bully who never had anyone care enough to stand up to him before, and in turn will go on to become a police officer who protects the vulnerable. Or maybe the power of a small act to change the world will move you to volunteer with the Somali children that we're working with through KAMSA. You'll tutor them in English, and one of those kids will discover a passion for language and someday become a poet laureate. Or maybe telling the story of your fulfillment in your career to someone during coffee hour will inspire them, and they will go on to make career choices that will shape the next innovative thing in their field. The possibilities are endless. It's not a coincidence that the heroes in this story are midwives. They're helping to birth something new. Nor is it a coincidence that one of the most pivotal stories in human history begins with civil disobedience. Howard Zinn says that historically, the most horrible things, war, genocide, slavery, have resulted not from disobedience, but from obedience. And therefore, conversely, alleviating those things comes from disobedience. The things we do this week, our actions, our decision, our choices, will in fact ripple out with consequences foreseen and unforeseen, for good or for ill, for the health or the damage of the world. And so I have two pieces of homework for you this week. Julie's not the only one who hands out homework. What are you going to do this week to make the world a better place? Take that home. Chew on it. Pray on it. What are you going to do this week to make the world a better place? Maybe it's adopting a child who turns out to be the next George Washington Carver, or simply the love of your life. Or maybe you'll go out of your way to interact with someone of a different race when you run into them at the grocery store, so that someone has a powerful and positive experience of someone who is different than them. So that's your first question. What are you going to do to make the world a better place this week? And secondly, who or what do you need to stand up to? You may be called to stand up boldly like Congressman John Lewis and his 50 plus years of nonviolent witness to civil rights. Or it may be a quiet act of desperation, like Shipra and Pua, who just couldn't kill babies. One of the most powerful church testimonies I ever heard came from a young man who was with my last church. The church was trying to discern whether or not we were called to do some intensive ministry with a homeless shelter that only took in teens. And this was a teen who had gone through that shelter. When he got up to tell the congregation about the shelter, he simply said, "I went to Pathfinders after running away from home. I ran away because one day I just snapped and I could no longer watch my grandfather and my uncle beat up my mom." That young man, through an act of civil disobedience, set off a chain reaction, not only through that church, but also through his household. I'm proud to be able to say that he now has a social work degree and has helped his mom escape as well, and is working at a women's shelter. We each and every one of us can do things to make a difference, and standing up often is the first step. The question isn't whether there is something that you can do to make the world a better place. The question isn't whether there's something for you to stand up to. The question is what you're going to do, what you're going to stand up against. Some of these actions, they may be big, bold, courageous. Others might be small and hardly noticeable. Yet they all have the potential to ripple out, affecting countless lives. In today's readings, it's Shipra and Pua quietly standing up to a bully and a tyrant. Who knows what it will be for you today, this week, this year? So, what would you do if I told you that what you do this week could change the world? What if I told you that you are called to midwife God's grace? May it be so.